This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by and big thanks to Archaeological Research and Supply, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, Royal Gold, Papa and Barkley, and we're welcoming a brand new sponsor tonight, Sisu Extracts. Welcome aboard, and thanks a lot. We could not do it without you. Much appreciation. What we want to do in the next hour is test conventional wisdom, which holds that the Humboldt name, the Humboldt brand, in and of itself will ensure the success of this area's cannabis industry and continue the economic support for the area that the black market industry provided for so long. And it might do just that. On the other hand, is there a danger in taking for granted the commercial power of the Humboldt brand in a legal market that promises more and more and more competition? So one of the questions is, how much do we rely on or gamble on our past notoriety? So, Larry, that's a good question, and it's difficult to answer, but we're going to take a shot at it.
We're going to give it a try. It is a difficult question to answer. I mean, I think the reason that we first started thinking about this was it came from the realization that even people who don't exactly know where Humboldt County is mm-hmm. know the name Humboldt County and know its association with cannabis, and not just as a producer, but as a producer of quality cannabis.
And quality, as we're going to find out in this hour, is a key, right?
That's what we're gonna find out. Yeah, and so the question was, how much of a value is there to the Humboldt County brand,
and how do you maintain that value?
Exactly.
Figure out what the value is, and then be very, very careful to maintain it. So we're going to talk with some folks near and far about the Humboldt brand. We're going to hear from some local companies that have made a splash outside this area, and we're going to go down to the Los Angeles area to talk with somebody with no economic ties to Humboldt, but who does advise those in the cannabis business. So let's start to get some perspectives here and try to figure this out. Who are we going to go to first?
Well, you know, since the cannabis industry, at least the legal cannabis industry, is so new, mm-hmm. We thought that we'd start with some non-cannabis companies, some local producers who have been successful in getting their products beyond the Redwood Curtain. So we're going to start with Mary Keene. Have you ever had a Cypress Grove chef?
I was just going to say, I'm one of those people who did not like goat cheese, ever, until I tasted Humboldt Fog. And I found out that I'm not alone in that. There are people out there who have had it in their mind, maybe one bad experience or whatever it was, that they didn't like goat cheese. And then they went somewhere to dinner or somebody gave them some Humboldt Fog, and lo and behold, they're goat cheese fans. So, yeah, we're going to talk with Mary Keene of Cypress Grove Chev, goat cheese, Humboldt Fog, real goats in a real field around here. Success, yes, but the product comes at a premium cost.
In Humboldt County, I think we recognize that. I think people have realized that we have higher costs of production here. So bringing raw materials in and out of the county is more expensive, and finished goods in and out. Like, we have to ship on a small truck, and a small refrigerated truck is a rare commodity these days. So we have to ship to the Bay Area, offload it onto a bigger truck, which is what goes across. And that adds, you know, a fair amount of cost because you pay for an overnight storage. So I don't know so much if the world recognizes Humboldt as a producer of really quality goods, but I agree with you that it very much is. I mean, there's a lot of really fine products produced here, but I think to succeed in a marketplace outside of Humboldt, you have to be really good because you're going to be at a premium price point.
So what we're trying to do here then is learn from the experience of those who have been able to participate in the legal marketplace in this state and in this country, and Cypress Grove is one of them. But as she says, and we keep hearing this in a lot of industries, transportation and the added cost from here to other markets is a huge issue. And it makes the end product more expensive.
Right. And that's a key driver of all of this. I mean, the realization is that it just does cost more to produce products up here in Humboldt County for various reasons, transportation certainly being one of them.
Yeah.
And so your products are going to have to command a premium price.
Right. And so how do you convince the end consumer and maybe the retailer as well to put into their inventory to buy from here something that's more expensive? It has to be known as a higher quality, we think. Let's go back to Mary Keene again at Cypress Grove. Chev, the question some analysts ask is whether in the legal marketplace, our population in this area could, or whether it's large enough to support the kind of retail market needed to drive the economy, which makes us wonder about the importance of access to larger markets, which follows on the whole transportation thing. The idea is we produce more around here than we can consume, and even the population around here is not large enough to replace the amount of money that the black market has supported. Let's hear what Mary Keene has to say.
I don't know about every business, but I do know, I mean, what's our population now? 150,000, do you think? Something like that. So if every single person in Humboldt County buys your product twice a year, and your profit margin, if you're really lucky in any business, is 10-ish percent, it's hard. So I do think you certainly want to think about at least going to the Bay Area.
At least to the Bay Area. And that's a key there, at least to the Bay Area. And in the cannabis industry, what we're hearing is at least the Bay Area, at least Los Angeles, and, you know, on and on and on. So you're going to need the larger markets to be profitable around here.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of demographics. I mean, you're just not going to be able to support a business of any size if your only market is Humboldt County. But once you get outside the Redwood Curtain, that brings up a host of other issues.
It does. And Cypress Grove, not the only one who's figured that out. You went and talked with Briar Bush at Lost Coast Brewery. That's another local company that has made success by getting their product into larger markets outside of the Humboldt County area. And they've been doing well for a long time now.
Yeah, we've grappled with that one for a lot of years, and I grappled with that with another food company that I was with up here back in the 90s. It's a challenge. It's not as challenging to our industry as it would be to perhaps somebody making something that's kind of less value compared to the weight. We think we've got the right metrics where there's enough perceived value along with our labeling and our marketing and everything else where we could push out that cost structure. And besides, trucking logistics is only one nominal cost structure that you're up against. So as long as it's not disproportionate, we handle it just fine. And again, the consumer, they're more interested in this perception that they're purchasing something that is remote. So I think they do understand that it's going to come at a premium. And these demographic groups are willing to pay that premium to experience liquid beer, et cetera, food products that are produced in other regions. So I think you just have to identify it as part of your marketing plan as to how it is that you're going to address the additional costing and just make sure that that perception is always out there to the consumer.
Couple of keys in that statement there, as far as I'm concerned. Consumers do sometimes want a product from a remote location for whatever reason, and they're willing to pay a premium price for it. However, as Briar Bush of Lost Coast Brewery says there, you have to make sure that the perception of quality is always out there, which gets to marketing, and also marketing.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he says you have to build into your marketing plan the idea that you're going to have this premium price, that you're going to need your products are going to be a little bit more expensive than some that are produced in other places where it's a little bit easier to get the product into the market.
And that perception of quality has to be backed up by real quality, and we're going to hear about that later in the hour. But the key there is that these businesses that have been successful in marketing their products outside of this area so that they can stay here, which is what they want to do, they play on the idea that, yes, they're remote, yes, they're a little more expensive, but you're going to realize once you try this product that it's worth the premium cost, and that's a key. And it has to be. Once they try it, it has to be, or they won't come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're going to have to realize that you're going to be competing against a whole bunch of other products from other places. That it's easier for them to market.
And those competitors may be from who knows where. They may be producing at a different scale, too, which gets us to another point. I'm glad you brought that up. There's also the fact that legalization in this state allows large-scale production virtually anywhere, not just in Humboldt. Warehouse production in Los Angeles we hear about a lot. Large acreage production on farmland just about anywhere. As an example, Larry, you and I have been sent information about a farming collective with access to huge acreage between the Bay Area and the Salinas and Stockton areas. And so the question comes about with that kind of competition out there. Are we set up here such that our farmers can compete? Here's Mary Keene again.
I don't know what's going to happen with all the next year, probably, while things settle out with the legalities. I think I'm on the Humboldt Area Foundation board, and we went to Southern Humboldt, and the businesses there are down 50% to 70%. And my concern is that the tax structure is really going to force a lot of the boutique cannabis folks out of business, because it wasn't arranged for anything other than huge. It really is frightening to me. But if what the goal was to, you know, and I'm not that knowledgeable in this field, but if the goal is to produce the Napa of the cannabis industry here, I think we're set up to miss the mark with the way the taxation and the, you know, how they've got to do samples from every batch. So if you're it's one of the reasons our goat cheese is so expensive. So our batch is so small compared to a cow milk company that our costs of sampling are high as a percentage. So if you're a small cannabis producer and your cost of sampling is $1,000 and you have a small harvest, but somebody is doing a huge indoor grow and they have that same cost, that's hard. And I think we missed the mark.
Yeah, so she's talking about scale there, obviously. So that $1,000 that she's talking about there might be a lot to a small cultivator, whereas that same $1,000 might seem, I don't want to say pocket change, but would be a lot easier to deal with and to fold into your plans for somebody who's producing on an exponentially larger scale.
Right.
And so that makes it so much more difficult when you are small to compete with something that is producing at such a larger scale that they can fold in some of these costs that don't negatively impact them in such a way as it would for a small producer.
Yeah, absolutely. And she talks about perhaps the tax structure and the way things were set up works against the producer, particularly the smaller producer. And we hear that time and time again. I'm not a tax expert. It may be true. It may not be. I guess the proof will be in the future. But that's something that can be adjusted. What can't be adjusted is just the reality of the scale of production. Mm-hmm. If you're a producer who has thousands of acres under cultivation and you're right next to a rail line, you're going to get your product to market cheaper than someone who is up here growing at a small
and
scale.
It's one stop to the Bay Area or Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly.
Mary tells the story often that when she first got started, she had to put the goat cheese on the last Greyhound bus to San Francisco. And the people in San Francisco would even go and pick it up. To get somebody to do that, it has to be quality, right?
That's the key.
It's going to be the key, and it's got to be that perception remains. It's going to be making sure that the quality around here maintains that high standard, so that if something has the Humboldt name on it, people will buy it and they will come back and get it again because they will realize that it's worth it.
Yeah, I think those two things go hand in hand.
I think they do too. It's got to be part of the marketing.
Yeah, it's got to be part of the marketing. You've got to push the Humboldt brand and build on the fact that we have this already established.
Right.
I mean, the last 20 or 30 years, it's been established, but it can go away.
It can go away. And as we're going to hear later in the hour, that it could go away easily. Just with a little bit of bad product in the market somewhere, you can get word of mouth advertising out there that, you know, don't touch it. It's not worth the extra price. You don't want that out there at all. So the quality has to remain high. And we keep hearing over and over and over, access to larger markets and marketing consumers, it's going to be the key. Is there more? There is more. What about marketing to retailers, not just the end consumers, but also to retailers who might want to carry Humboldt products? What about tourism in this area, bringing people up here to see exactly where it's grown? What about collective marketing as a three-county region of cannabis producers instead of just Humboldt? There's another question we're going to deal with. We're going to get to all of this, and we're going to hear more from the locals as well, and they're going to weigh in on all this.
Yeah, we're just getting started with this discussion. We're going to continue it in just a minute. And a reminder, we'll have time to take your calls a little bit later. You can reach us at 786-5946. If you prefer email, you can email in questions or comments to studio@humboldtchronicles.com. We're going to go to a break right now, and we're going to start it off with a Cultivator Minute. We talked with Sean Trainer, who's CEO of Cincy Valley, about some of the challenges people seeking permits face.
Yeah, it's a very complicated process for a cultivator these days, no doubt about that. When a cultivator goes to get his local permit, he has to go to the water board first. And when he does that, he has to provide a site survey and any remediations and items like that that need to be brought into compliance. He's given up to a five-year window. Basically, everybody's kind of got the same problem. It's water, slope, discharge, those types of things. It just really depends on what mountain or watershed they're on. Roads were cut in by the timber industry. Sometimes those roads aren't compliant with either Caltrans or the water board, and dust creates a discharge. Or if they're pulling water from a source, they have to have a lake stream bed alteration agreement with Fish and Wildlife. They have to have water board documentation that shows how much they're gathering, and then they monitor that and they have to record that data. So we've provided like a tablet that gives them the ability to just have a checkbox on there, and then they can go in and fill in that documentation right on a tablet, and then we're gathering that data in our cloud. And then at the end of the season or whenever the inspections take place, we have all that documentation already digitized, ready, so that we can compare that on our side then to the yields that they're pulling out and try to give that farmer then a business. You know, he'll be able to look at his business as a whole, what it costs to produce, what he's done to improve his environment, and then what the yields of his efforts brought back. So that's kind of our end goal. I'm Sean Trainer, CEO and founder of Cincy Valley. Our website is cincyvalley.com. You can reach us through the contact information through the website.
High quality music in this county too. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. I'm Chuck Rogers with Larry Trask. To tee up the next part of our discussion, we want to go down to the Los Angeles area to talk with Joshua Kappel. He's a partner with Vicente Cederberg, which is a national law firm representing individuals and businesses in the cannabis industry. We wanted to talk about the strength of the Humboldt brand with someone who was not from here and find out what recommendations we might get as to keeping the brand strong and viable in a much more competitive market. First, Josh recommends self-policing, which is to say, adhering to local standards of production in order to keep the name Humboldt associated with quality.
And making sure that those who use the Humboldt name are growing and selling the best cannabis that's out there, or whatever, you know, maybe it's pesticide-free, or maybe it's mildew or mold-free, you know, whatever the standards as a community you guys come to appreciate with the Humboldt brand, you have to be diligent in protecting it. And, you know, and one business that's selling Humboldt branded cannabis as very sub-quality will just bring down the brand for everyone. And, you know, and so I think there is a level of self-policing. I think there's a level of working together to create create standards and Appalachia standards of what quality of product you have to have before you use this brand. So that's sort of part one on the internal piece. And then part two on the external piece, you know, like when you look at Napa Valley when it comes to wine, we look at Champagne France, and you look at these, you know, they come together and engage in collective marketing. You know, and so it's like if you're part of, you know, a Humboldt County, you know, branding alliance, you know, engaging collective marketing in Southern California to push the brand as a whole, you know, could definitely, you know, could be something, you know, that increases brand value. I mean, there's also a lot that's going on with different, you know, with different co-ops and collectives in the area. And I think, you know, support, you know, joining them and supporting them and also, you know, pushing a brand through them as well can also help you, you know, engage in this collective marketing. So in short, one is making sure the product remains the best, and then two, making sure the world knows that it's the best.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that you mentioned Napa in there. As you might imagine, you probably know, a lot of discussion around here leading up to legalization, and certainly since, has involved the idea that Humboldt will become the Napa of cannabis, which certainly could happen. Now, there are a couple of issues there. One, Napa wineries can ship a case of wine to Wichita or to Nashville. Humboldt County pot growers can't do that.
Right.
Right now, those of us in this area who are interested in this are restricted to the California market, which is substantial as we know, but it's still not the whole nation. So is there a chance that we could overestimate the value of the Humboldt brand here? What I'm getting at there is, before legalization, this product pumped billions of dollars into this region, not just our county, but several counties in this region. The challenge now is to replace that money somehow into our local economy, and a lot of people are putting a lot of eggs in the county becoming the Napa of cannabis basket. What's your view of that?
If you look at the cannabis market right now, I don't think the cannabis consumer has quite figured out what they like the best yet in a legal and regulated market. And we haven't developed ways for people to use cannabis socially. So there hasn't been the social experiment of the social marketing aspect of, oh, no, this is the best, or try this or try that. So, you know, I do think that there's, you know, there is a lack of brand loyalty in some cases. Now, don't get me wrong. There is a number of people who I know who are diehard, you know, brand enthusiasts about certain cannabis products, but I think that the in general, the cannabis market is still being made, you know, and it's still being shifted. And, you know, and so there, you know, there is a risk that if Humboldt doesn't remain on top and doesn't engage in collective marketing and doesn't have strong brand standards, you know, that the brand could devalue, you know, and that there could be a region in, you know, in Europe, that, you know, and maybe it's Albania that grows the next best weed, or, you know, it's like, you know, who really knows when you look at this from a global perspective in an industry that's just beginning, you know, a legal industry that's just beginning, an industry where true marketing dollars haven't been spent yet. So there is a risk.
You make such a good point there. When you talk about collective marketing and tying it into the fact that there are other people who could grow high quality cannabis. And here's the thing, the equipment is available for that. The knowledge is out there. And we keep reading that there are people in your part of the state that are, you know, that are buying 50,000 square foot warehouses and getting ready to go into an industrial level production with pretty high quality cannabis. So you're collective marketing idea, tell me if I'm right or wrong, you think that that's crucial for our area. Is that right?
I do think it's crucial, and it's the story told, you know, and so it's the growers in LA will say, oh no, LA warehouse weed is the best. And the cultivators up in Humboldt will say, you know, the outdoor and sun-grown Humboldt weed in our ultra-rich soil by the coast is the best. And I think it's just part of the story, you know, that needs to get out there. And if everyone in Southern California is only hearing that LA warehouse weed is the best, whether or not that's true, that's all they're going to be hearing. And so if you're not collective marketing, if you're not, you know, if you're not telling the Humboldt story, you know, then consumers just won't have, they won't be able to make an educated choice. You know, and I also think there's a question too of, you know, it's like, you know, with Humble, you know, do you, you know, is it more of an Emerald Triangle collective marketing campaign, or do you focus just on Humble County? That's sort of a more of a question for you guys as community.
What a great point there. Again, that's Joshua Kappel. We'll be going back to him momentarily. He's a partner with Vicente Cederberg, national law firm representing individuals and businesses in the cannabis industry. And Larry, the point he makes there about collective marketing and keeping the name Humboldt in front of people, referring to quality, is going to be key. Now, the question he poses there, though, is a very good one. And what do we do here? The question he poses is, do we move forward with collective marketing as Humboldt, or bringing in a couple of more counties, whether it's called Emerald Triangle or whatever it would be called? That's a question that cultivators and marketers around here are going to have to decide about.
Yeah, it sounds like that is a decision that's going to have to be made. And as I think about it, there, it seems like there's pros and cons. Mm-hmm. If you expand the sort of marketing effort to Mendocino and Trinity counties or elsewhere, There are some advantages to that in terms of the resources that can be thrown at the problem. The other side of the coin, though, is that Humboldt County has the reputation.
Yeah.
I mean, people do know, of course, that it's this whole region, mm-hmm. but the word Humboldt is what people associate with. So if all of a sudden Humboldt County doesn't mean just Humboldt County, it also means Mendocino. Mm-hmm. Does that dilute the brand?
I don't know. And could you do both? Could there be Humboldt collective marketing? Could there also be some sort of collective marketing that regionalizes the whole production up here? I don't know.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. If you move outside of Humboldt and you bring more and more people into this collective marketing, you have to do more self-policing as to quality, as you say, because that increases the chance that some consumer somewhere could get a bad batch. I mean, who knows? Do you hear what do you hear along these lines?
Well, that seems to me the linchpin of the whole thing.
Yeah.
is that there has to be some sort of formal protection of quality standards. Mm-hmm. And what I think of, you know, in the EU, they have these things, these protective designation of origin. So in other words, you can't produce Pecorino Sardo cheese mm-hmm. if you're not producing it in this specific place with these specific ingredients
right.
and in this specific methodology. There are laws protecting it, and they do it because they need that consistent quality.
They recognize the value of the perception of quality.
Absolutely.
And they don't want to risk losing that, and they know that if they lose it, they're done.
So they have formal laws in place to try to protect it and to control the way that these products are produced.
Those are local ordinances too, right? Those when you say laws, you're serious about that.
They're laws.
They're on the books, and that's how it is.
Yeah, it's people get in trouble for it's like counterfeiting.
Yeah,
it's sort of viewed in that same way.
Could that be done here?
You know, I don't know whether we have the sort of legal structure or not mm-hmm. to do something like that. Mm-hmm. There are trademark laws and things like that can be used. But
is your feeling that we should, the collective marketing should just be Humboldt?
You know,
just because of the history of the name?
I can't hold myself out as a marketing expert, but my gut says yes.
Yeah.
Because that seems to me that's where the value is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a long reputation of quality cannabis coming out of Humboldt, and it's the word Humboldt that carries the value.
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. We're going to go back to Josh now. And given some advertising restrictions that exist because cannabis is continued to be federally illegal, it might be important to view the market in terms of more than one audience. And that is to say, marketing could be directed not just at the end consumer, that is an individual in California somewhere, but also at California retailers, reminding them that Humboldt and or Emerald Triangle, whatever it ends up being, products need to be in their stores because the products are among the best, and to give their inventory the credibility of complete coverage of what's available in this state.
marketing to the retailer and having marketing inside the retail outlets are going to be crucial. You know, with the very restrictive advertising restrictions, you know, you can't just go, you can't just say Los Angeles billboard campaign. You have to be more creative, you know, to limit advertising to those who are 21 and over, and, you know, and limit what sort of like outdoor advertising you're engaging in. And so, you know, the business to business marketing is key. And then the in-store advertisements are key too, you know, and that coupled with, you know, a consumer campaign where the consumers are asking their local dispenser to carry this product, you know, like I think are all different pieces, you know, all different pieces of the puzzle. And then to go on, to go back to one thing that you said, I think that's key is, you know, I think the community also needs to decide, you know, how does this look like in terms of the tourism? Like, are you guys going to market people coming to Humboldt, you know, staying at a bed and, you know, a bed and breakfast, you know, taking tours of the farm, you know, consuming the cannabis right where it's grown. And, you know, and is that also part of the marketing campaign as well? And if you can figure out the delivery piece of this all, you know, like, you know, making sure that, you know, different delivery companies carry particular products, you know, is also a good route too. So, you know, so by retailers, we need both the storefronts and then the delivery companies.
I kind of assume that at some point in the future, and maybe the relatively near future, the prescriptions against transporting cannabis from one state to another will disappear, that there'll be change in federal regulations that will allow that to happen. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are along those lines.
Yeah, there is movement federally to change federal law, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, 10 years, who knows? But you know, that's one predicament. Then the second predicament is changing all the state laws. You know, so it's like, you know, when you're shipping wine from Napa, some states you can ship to directly, some states you can't, some states you pay these taxes, some states you can't. And so there's still going to take some time to go through and change Oregon's law to allow import from Northern California. And maybe they never want to because they care more about the Oregon brand. You know, and so the, you know, there could be some protectionist legislative battles in these different states as it relates to shipping cannabis. But hopefully, with federal legalization, we can actually, you know, have the export of cannabis worldwide, you know, and you can start to, you know, build a brand not just all over the states, but all over the world. And I do think, you know, though, too, and, you know, and to get back for one second, is that there always will be a desire for sun-grown, organic, natural cannabis that's high quality. And I do think that, you know, suits, you know, Humboldt and the Emerald Triangle region very well.
So there'll always be a market for it. The question is, of course, how big a market? Where is it? How do we get there? So on and so forth. He makes a lot of good points in there, though. You know, and it gets us back to reputation and marketing and transportation. And I like his idea of business-to-business marketing, and I like his idea of in-store advertising, which is something that can be done even in the current advertising-restricted marketplace that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, right. There are rules built into the law that are far more restrictive than just like a can of soup.
Yeah,
in terms of what you can do in terms of advertising, and I think that as far as the in-store stuff goes, there's kind of a chicken and egg situation with demand. I mean, the stores will carry it if they believe that their customers demand it.
Right.
And the customers will demand it if the stores carry it. So,
right.
You know, you've got to solve that issue as well.
Which, that's such a huge point, and I think that gets back to quality. You know, if the quality is there, you know, some of these retailers are going to be people, obviously, who are in this industry who will know what Humboldt means, or Emerald Triangle. They'll know that. So, initially, they may want to carry the products that are produced here. But if their customers don't come back for them, and those products, that inventory doesn't move, as they say, then they'll reduce the amount of it that they carry. So as long as the quality stays way up there and is among the best, if not the best, then those retailers will continue to carry it because the consumers will realize it's worth paying the premium price. If the quality's not there, then the retailers are going to lose their incentive to carry it because their customers won't be buying it enough so that that inventory doesn't turn over enough for them to continue to carry it. So it is a chicken and the egg, but I think what it gets down to is quality. Getting it in the store, but then after it's in the store and the consumers start trying it, the quality is going to carry it. But the quality's got to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you consider, as we talked about in the first segment, that these products coming out of Humboldt County are necessarily going to command a premium price.
Yeah.
Just because of the economics of production.
So it has to be worth it.
It has to be worth it.
Easier said than done, right? There's something else we want to talk about, and as we're getting into this whole Humboldt brand and reputation in this county and in this region, and that has to do with the fact that for some people, the reputation that Humboldt has is not positive, right? And what do you do about that? How do you navigate marketing waters outside of this area when you know that marketing into a general audience, you're necessarily going to bump into some people who don't necessarily think that the reputation Humboldt has is good? What do you do about that? How do you navigate that? We're gonna get into that after a break here. Listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Reach us if you want to at 707-786-5946 or email us at studio@humboldtchronicles.com. In competitive situations, I'm a big proponent, and a lot of people are, of finding ways to turn negatives into positives. Now, relative to the cannabis issue, we know that at least some people outside this area have a negative view of Humboldt. So what I'm wondering is whether there's a chance to turn what used to be negative perceptions of our area into positive perceptions as the legal market expands and continues to expand. Let's go back now to Briar Bush at Lost Coast Brewery.
Well, I suspect the regulation that's being applied to the industry today is going to be some sort of a cleansing process to, break up some of that to some degree. Let's hope that it's all for the positive. I want everybody to have an opportunity to make their livelihood the way that they see fit, and that is partially what makes us who we are, so I'm not advocating one direction or the other. But yes, I do think that there will be some degree of evolution as to how they look at this county and what it is that comes out of here. However, at the same time, you go Colorado and these other states that are legalized and growing and doing so in mass production is only going to foster kind of a more open mindset to, the direction that the world is headed. And we might have been looked at as being rogue back years ago and teased. However, we were leaders.
We are leaders. I love that. That's how he's turning it around. And now you can do that. As he says, as more and more states legalize it, there could be an evolution of perception and thought. I think he's right about that. I hope he's right about that.
Yeah, I believe he is. I mean, I think if you just look at the history of the perception of cannabis over even the last 10 years, either the opinion poll after opinion poll shows a changing view, more acceptance of it.
And, that's a good point. Yeah.
And especially as more and more states begin to legalize it. I mean, Canada legalized it nationally, and that kicks in October, but the whole country it has legalized it. And I just feel like that has to have that effect of making it less of an outlaw thing and more of an accepted thing.
Right. And then we can come in and say, look, we've known this all along. That's why we're so good at it. We get back to the quality issue, and as Breyer says, we're the leaders now. Yeah. Instead of rogue, we're the leaders. So it comes full circle in that sense. And of course, Lost Coast Brewery, not the only one. If you're just joining us, we've also been talking with Mary Keene of Cypress Grove Chev. And we asked her how her company has navigated these difficult marketing waters using Humboldt references as a positive.
I think it'd be easy to break it. I mean, you just wouldn't mention it or put your toe in that water. I mean, we've put a whole foot in the water, really, with Humboldt Fog and all the names we have. So, you know, we've played along. One thing I've found is that people who aren't into it don't really notice the reference. So you can do it relatively safely, is what I've found. You know, if you don't associate already Humboldt with cannabis, you're not going to pick up on the names and the cues. So I think, you know, there's a lot of local companies that I don't think really play into it at all. You know, I'm a 60s, graduated from high school in the mid-60s and did the back to the land thing. And so we've really kept that marketing because it's really in our core who we are. So we have Purple Haze, which to me meant the song, but now it's a type of cannabis. You know, so we have what we call the flashback six-pack. So we have Ms. Natural, Purple Haze, Herbs to Humboldt, Sergeant Pepper. So we've kept that. We did a food show once where we our booth decoration was tie-dye and lava lamps. And surprisingly, we were the only ones at an international food show with lava lamps. So, I mean, it makes it fun. And one of our internal taglines is we take our cheese and our fun seriously, and we really do. And so I think it depends on how you play it, like everything. You know, you can talk about upscale, high-quality, humble cannabis, or you can talk about the underbelly of the whole industry, and you'll get a different reaction. Mm-hmm. So we play to the fun because, frankly, I think food is fun. I mean, you know, that's who we are as a company. We try to have a good time internally.
I love that. You know, she's talking about the fact that for people who get the reference, it's funny to them, it's fun to them. For people who don't get the reference, it's not a big deal. So they imagine being the only one at an international food conference with lava lamps. You know, to people who don't get the reference, it might just be, oh, look, they're doing something different. What a good idea, you know? And Sergeant Pepper, Herbs to Humboldt, Purple Haze, Humboldt Fog, and on and on and on. I think it's brilliant, and it's one of the reasons why they've been successful.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting how they've sort of subtly included these cues in there. It's kind of like the speakeasy. If you know the password,
yes,
you get in. If you don't, you know, you don't even notice it.
That's a great analogy. Yeah. You know, you don't have to have a password to buy Humboldt Fog. But if you do have a password, yeah.
Yeah, let me know what it is.
Yeah, right. It's a great idea, and I like what she has to say there and what Breyer had to say before that, because it ties everything in. And it's going to be navigating brand new paths, for sure, that have not existed before. And, you know, some people are going to make it and some people aren't. I mean, that's going to be what happens. And it's all how you do it and how you maintain the quality, how you get the word out, making sure you identify the right markets and making sure you do the business-to-business marketing as well, not just the marketing to individuals, and so on. You know, it's time to do business the way business is done if you're going to make it in the legal market.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it comes down to.
As it evolves. And one of the reasons why I was interested in her impression on this is because it occurs to me that, you know, yes, there is a connection in a lot of people's minds between Humboldt and cannabis. Mm-hmm. But going back to something I said earlier, it's not just cannabis; it's quality cannabis.
Right.
And these companies that are successful getting their non-cannabis products outside compete on the basis of quality. So if you could have some sort of magic, you know, marketing plan that just worked exactly the way you wanted it to, mm-hmm. what you would do, it seems to me, is not focus on the specific product, but just try to build an impression on people's minds that if it comes out of Humboldt, it's quality, whether it's cheese or beer or cannabis. Humboldt means quality,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's an interesting and perhaps overly ambitious marketing effort.
Well, no, I actually think it's it's correct. I think you're 100% right, because that's what drives the Napa brand. That's what drives all kinds of brands. That's what drives brands like, you know, mentioning before, certain kinds of cheeses from wherever it is, Switzerland, or where, chocolate from Belgium, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. There is a lot to that. There are a lot of lessons to be learned from regions with products that have done exactly what these folks are talking about in the past, and they've been successful. It's just that we have to get on board with that and make sure that that collective marketing gets done.
Yeah.
I hope it does. I think, you know, we've all been in certain kinds of businesses before. I think without that collective marketing, it's going to be difficult for anybody, because just think of the labor that it would take to try to do your own marketing. First of all, just to come up with some sort of marketing plan, then to produce that marketing, whether it's online or in broadcast or in print, whatever it is, just to produce it, to get it right, to get the right message out there, and then to try to get it placed in markets the size of San Francisco and Los Angeles and San Diego and Sacramento. Just the cost and all of the different outlets that would exist in markets that size. That's a full-time job. That's more than one full-time job just in itself. So this collective idea is huge, don't you think?
I do. I agree with that completely. And I think that the nugget that we took from all of these individuals that we talked to, who came to it from a different perspective, is that for a Humboldt County business to succeed getting its products outside, it's not going to be, we can't compete on price. That's not going to be our competitive advantage. But we're going to need some competitive advantage,
right?
Because there's going to be a lot of other producers there, and a lot of producers who have a lot easier time getting their product to the market than we will.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where I think that this branding effort, this marketing effort is critical.
Well, and just following up on what you said there, think about the auto industry and some of the higher cost cars in that market who have decided over a lot of years, and we all know which brands they are. Some of them market safety. You know, this is the safest car out there. This is the most reliable car out there. You'll get several hundred thousand miles out of this one. Or if you're in a wreck, you'll survive. You won't be it won't be as big a problem in a particular kind of car. So there are a lot of premium priced products out there who have decided what they're good at, and they've been successful at getting that branded into people's minds, and it's worked. And we're in a situation like that right now, where we have to market quality, and we have to make sure that we do that.
Yeah, and also obviously maintain the quality.
And maintain that quality. Yeah, what Josh was talking about, self-policing and making sure that the quality remains high, is going to be critical, because if somebody decides they want to pay that premium price and they don't think it's quite as what it was advertised as, they're not going to come back.
Yep.
So the quality's got to be there, and the name has to be there, and it's got to get to the right markets.
Yep, I agree.
Yep. Well, you've been listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, at lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. Want to go back and thank our sponsors and tell them that we much appreciate them. We couldn't do it without you. Archaeological Research and Supply, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, Royal Gold Soil, Papa and Barkley, and our newest sponsor, welcome aboard, and thank you very much, Sisu Extracts. Welcome aboard. We'll be back with the next Humboldt Chronicles on the third Wednesday of each month at 6 p.m., so we will see you next time on July the 18th at 6 o'clock.